In late December, this thing happened that people in the arms control world had been bracing for. Russia started firing missiles into Ukraine that had been made in North Korea.
The White House says Russia now has a new weapon, North Korean ballistic missiles.
Russia launched multiple North Korean ballistic missiles into Ukraine, including as part of its overnight aerial attack.
Russia has fired dozens of North Korean missiles into Ukraine since the beginning of the year. And military experts say this new pipeline of weapons couldn't come at a worse time for Kyiv. By most accounts, prospects for the war this year are grim. And military analysts say the best Ukraine can hope for is to hold the line as it waits for the U.S. and allies to send the weapons they need. Have you seen North Korean missiles before, or was this your first North Korean missile?
I'm a North Korean virgin.
This self-proclaimed North Korea missile virgin is Damian Spleeters. He's the deputy director of operations at Conflict Armament Research. And they have a team of investigators permanently in Ukraine that examine the remains of recovered weapon systems to try to figure out how they're made and what's in them.
It's like you have a pile of trash, you know, scrap metal in front of you and you know, wires coming out of it. And you just got to make sense of this pile.
We spoke with Damian in a previous episode where he was looking at Iranian missiles. But he's turned his attention to the latest weapons supplier in the war, North Korea. And he's been looking at a particular North Korean missile, something known as a KN-23 or KN-24. They're solid propellant short-range weapons. And while we've known North Korea has been upgrading its missiles for a while now, what we didn't know was whether they were any good. And it turns out the missiles careening into Ukraine seem to be as accurate as anything Russia has in its own arsenal. The other alarming thing about these missiles is that, until now, North Korea has only been testing them. This is the first time they're actually being used on the battlefield, which not only has all kinds of implications for what we thought about North Korea's ability to get around sanctions, but more ominously, what it says about the future of arms proliferation around the world. From Recorded Future News, I'm Dina Temple-Rest, and this is Click Here, a podcast about all things cyber and intelligence. We tell true stories about the people making and breaking our digital world. And today, a closer look at North Korean missiles in Ukraine. While Moscow has denied Pyongyang is providing it with weapons, we talk to people on the ground who have irrefutable evidence to the contrary. And we track not just how they got there, but what they reveal about Kim Jong-un's new efforts to get back in the arms proliferation business. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Adam Fleming from the Global Story podcast from the BBC World Service. We are looking at Lina Khan, the face of the US government's battle to regulate big tech. She's already redefined the way we talk about monopolies. Now she's taking on the likes of Amazon and Meta. But who is she? And will she win? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Click Here. I'm Dina Temple-Rest. Since 2006, the United Nations has adopted 9 major sanctions resolutions against North Korea, and they're all in response to North Korea's weapons tests and its missile launches. But for years, any country willing to ignore the UN sanctions could count on Pyongyang to provide the arms they needed, though they were second rate and kind of old fashioned.
Soviet Scud ballistic missile, which is a ballistic missile that really is of a kind of 1950s, 1960s vintage.
This is Jeffrey Lewis. He's an arms control policy expert at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies at Monterey.
That missile is fine, but it's not great. And almost every country that imports Scuds wants to move on to something better, something more accurate, something that's maybe a little smaller and more compact so you can make it more mobile.
And he says that North Korea saw the market changing. And in the last 5 years, responded by heavily investing in creating missiles that were more tactical and easier to use on the battlefield.
These are new, modern missiles. And they really didn't exist in North Korea 10 years ago. We remember the North Koreans selling Model Ts all over the world. And, you know, these are... you know, these are more like, I don't know, Ford Mustangs or something. I hate car analogies. I can't believe I just did that.
Jeffrey and other researchers who track Kim Jong-un agree that North Korea pivoted to these new kinds of missiles after the North Korean leader had a bit of a breakup.
He wrote me beautiful letters, and they're great letters. We fell in love.
That's former President Trump talking about Kim Jong-un. And it turns out, their love was short-lived. Kim Jong-un wanted all sanctions lifted, and, well, the American president didn't want to commit. And hell hath no fury like a dictator scorned. Kim's response was to step up North Korea's weapons programs.
North Korea switched gears and immediately began testing these missiles, which I presume had been in development the whole time.
It seems there's praise all round in North Korea after its latest test of an
intercontinental ballistic missile.
With the potential to hit the U.S.
And now these new and improved North Korean missiles have made their way to Russia.
Which we think are probably just the tip of the iceberg in terms of North Korean munitions that are being exported to sustain this terrible, terrible war of aggression.
In Ukraine.
Yes, yes. Sorry, when I say showing up in Russia, sadly, they show up in Russia and then the Russians immediately use them in Ukraine.
Authorities believe some of the first North Korean missiles crashed into Kharkiv, a city about 25 miles from the Russian border, at the end of December. And were you in Kharkiv when they grabbed this North Korean missile, or was one of your team there?
Our team works in Kyiv for the moment.
This is Damian Splaters, the weapons inspector again. He said since the beginning of the war, the Ukrainian military gives them a call when they find remnants of weapons. So when they found an unusual-looking motor and tail section on a missile buried in some rubble, they sent it to Damian's lab. Within hours, Damian's team had what was left of the missile lying on a kind of examination table. And they began meticulously taking it apart, photographing it as they went along. There were close-ups of every chip, every screw, navigation systems. They were looking for clues about not just how the missile is made, but where the components inside it came from. And almost right away, they could tell that this was not a Russian-made missile.
There was some realization pretty fast that this was something different, but the challenge then was to be able to prove it.
They started with obvious visual clues, comparing it to systems on the Russian missiles.
And we saw that the diameter of the Iskander, the Russian system, was smaller. So that's the first clue that tells us it's a different system.
The tail on this new missile looked weird too. The rudder that kind of steers it, something known as a jet vane actuator, was different. They had their suspicions about where it came from, and then they found proof.
Then looking into, you know, the insides of the missile, we found a Korean Hangul script character.
Like a letter in Korean. And in addition to that, stamped into two different parts of the missile, were the numbers 112.
could be a reference to the February 11 plant, which assembles those missiles in North Korea, or it could be a reference to the Juche calendar, the official North Korean calendar, which 112 corresponds to 2023.
Which suggests two things. One, that the missiles rolled off the assembly line in North Korea last year, and two, went to Russia just a short time later. And then Damien found something even more damning, a relatively new American computer chip.
The most recent component was produced in March of 2023. So first of all, it shows how North Korea is able to produce missiles despite, you know, a whole series of sanctions.
A series of sanctions that were supposed to stop chips from getting to North Korea in the first place. But this showed that not only is North Korea finding a way to buy these chips, they're actually getting their hands on some of the latest ones. When we come back, researchers have finally figured out how these missiles are getting to Russia, and they're worried that these new missiles may be paving the way for a new arms race. Stay with us.
Blockchain, NFTs, AI. What does this mean for you and me? I'm Sherelle Dorsey, host of the TED Tech Podcast, where we bring you the latest innovations and biggest ideas in tech. Tech is evolving fast and it affects our lives, from the metaverse to the watches on our wrists. You'll learn why people in AI make good business partners, about our future self-driving robo-taxi, what the next generation of Siri, Alexa, Google looks like, and a lot more. Find TED Tech on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Jeffrey Lewis, the arms control expert at Middlebury that we met before, got pretty obsessed with open source intelligence when he was still a graduate student.
And so I really became focused on the idea of, well, can we, on a public basis, have the same kind of information and analytic methodology as the intelligence community?
And then the technology caught up with you.
Yes. I mean, got a little lucky there.
Back in the 1990s, when Jeffrey was starting out in the non-proliferation business, satellite imagery was expensive and mostly controlled by governments. We've talked a little bit about this in a previous episode, how over the past decade, private imaging from satellite companies like Maxar and Planet Labs had provided researchers and analysts with access to hundreds of thousands of images they rarely saw before. What that means is that regular people, not just governments, can now keep track of everything from crop yields to troop movements, and they have all kinds of satellite images to choose from. Jeffrey and his team rely on a lot of those sort of open source images. This past fall, Jeffrey and his team were looking at satellite photographs of North Korea, and they saw something there they'd never seen before: shipping containers.
North Korea doesn't have shipping containers because it's kind of a poor country.
Those big metal boxes you see on ships are a sign of a functional economy. They actually revolutionized trade back in the 1970s.
Which means you can put the container on a ship, you stack it up with a bunch of other same size containers, you take it into a port, there's a big crane, it moves all the containers off, you put the containers on a truck or a train, and they go wherever they're going to go. And so you can basically move easily between ships and trucks and trains, and it makes things very frictionless, which is how we end up with all the crap we buy from China, right?
But because it isn't part of the world economy, North Korea missed that shipping revolution.
How do they usually ship things in boxes?
North Korea has a really old-timey freight industry, more like the train set that maybe your grandpa had, you know, so flatbed cars, box cars, where you really have to move things by hand. And that's very inefficient. But it's how North Korea does it.
So you can imagine that when those containers suddenly started showing up in a country that had never used them before, well, it made people wonder, particularly given that Russia had made it clear to anyone who would listen that they wanted to buy weapons for the war in Ukraine. So it didn't seem a stretch to think that these containers
are being used to export literally boatloads of weapons, missiles, shells, things like that, from North Korea to Russia.
So while they couldn't see what was inside the containers, there wasn't much else North Korea would be producing that Moscow would ever want.
And have you been able to see, say, something going from a munitions factory into one of these shipping containers? Do you have to guess what's inside?
We have to guess.
But it's a pretty educated guess.
You can see the containers stack up at this port, and then you can see the Russians then ship it to a port in Russia where they put the containers on a train and then they ship them to the front.
The U.S. government has released their own commercial satellite pictures of this, and the Royal United Services Institute, a defense and security think tank in London, did their own analysis too. What no one has seen yet is how missiles go from factories to the containers they're loading on those ships.
We know where North Korea makes the missiles, and we can see the shipping containers show up in the port. But where they're actually putting the missiles into the containers, I don't know yet.
Then Jeffrey and his team wondered, what is North Korea getting in return? And then they noticed some unusual activity at the land border Russia shares with North Korea.
We see all kinds of goods being brought into North Korea and then transferred onto North Korean trains. And so at the primary train station, the North Koreans have erected lots of housing, presumably to accommodate the workers who are handling all of the moving of goods from Russian trains to North Korean trains. Goods that are, I would imagine, payment for those weapons coming in.
And if you use your imagination, it isn't too hard to figure out what that might be.
For the longest time, we have imagined that food shortages are the biggest threat to the regime.
And whatever is coming into North Korea from Russia is small enough for human beings to physically remove from the Russian train cars and then put them into North Korean ones.
No cranes, no big heavy objects. And so when we see all of these goods covered in tarps laying out, we don't know what the goods are, but we're imagining it's things like food, things that can be left out on a platform and covered with a tarp and still be good.
Things like a bag of rice or dried beans or something.
The ability of North Korea to turn its weapons industry into a barter agreement to deliver food to the country is probably a pretty big win for the Kim family.
No one is sure how many North Korean missiles are making their way to Russia. But Jeffrey is sure about one thing. It's more than just the 9 missiles the United Nations says they have fired into Ukraine so far.
Missiles are like hot dogs or hot dog buns. You don't buy them one at a time. You buy them in big batches.
And the fact that North Korea has been able to get their weapons into the war in Ukraine has implications for not just the latest conflict, but potentially for future ones.
The North Koreans are going to get all kinds of actual practical data about how well their weapons perform. I presume the North Koreans, once they have that data, will go back and make changes.
It will be the first time they'll be able to see their weapons in action. So the big strides they've already made in developing better weapons in the past few years will be out in the wild. And now they have real-life data that will allow them to make their weapons even better. The silver lining is that it isn't just North Koreans who are learning from all of this.
So, yes. It's for somebody like me who does entirely open source work using public information, these moments are huge revelations.
Jeffrey Lewis, Western governments, anyone interested in North Korea are all going to learn from this data as well.
We see how they perform. We can look at pictures of the debris. You can only imagine that the United States and its allies are getting orders of magnitude more information because they actually possess the systems and the debris.
They're also getting data from that weapons investigator on the ground in Ukraine, Damien and his team. Remember, they were taking high-resolution pictures of debris, and now they're providing it to people like Jeffrey to help them decode North Korea's production processes, their quality control, even their design choices.
I don't think we have any giant light bulb conclusions, but there is just so much new information.
As all of this new information comes in, they do expect some light bulb moments in the future. And that could help the rest of the world understand not just what North Korea is doing, but how to defend against those missiles if they're ever targeted at the rest of us. Jeffrey says whatever it is North Korea is doing, they're clearly proud of it. He knows that because that part, well, they're not hiding that at all. Jeffrey says Kim Jong-un seems to have a newfound swagger. And among other things, he has started visiting more and more munitions factories. And he's making public that's what he's doing. Jeffrey says it feels almost like an advertising campaign. Sort of like Kim saying to the whole world, see what we've been doing in Russia? We aren't just selling crappy Scuds anymore. We've got a whole new set of missiles that you can buy too. This is Click Here. Here are some of the top cyber and intelligence stories of the past week. A California federal judge ordered spyware producer NSO Group to turn over some of the source code of its Pegasus software to WhatsApp. It's part of the app's long-running lawsuit against the Israeli company. WhatsApp alleges NSO planted Pegasus spyware on phones by exploiting an audio calling vulnerability in its system from 2019 to May 2020. WhatsApp filed a lawsuit against NSO in 2019, saying the commercial spyware company conducted surveillance on about 1,400 WhatsApp users over the course of about 2 weeks. The targets included journalists, human rights activists, political dissidents, diplomats, and other senior foreign government officials. According to WhatsApp's complaint, someone from NSO Group actually groused to a WhatsApp employee in a message when the vulnerability was fixed, saying, "You just closed our biggest remote for cellular. It's news all over the world." Speaking of lawsuits, OpenAI is facing a raft of new ones by three online news outlets, including The Intercept. They allege OpenAI infringed on their copyright when it used their stories to train their AI models. The latest court filings came just days after OpenAI sought to dismiss part of a similar suit the New York Times filed at the end of last year.
We've been going through the lawsuit.
Wild.
It is wild to see.
And not to be left out, Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla and SpaceX, announced that he's also suing OpenAI and its CEO, Sam Altman, for what he says is a breach of contract.
Musk alleges that OpenAI has, quote, been transformed into a closed-source de facto subsidiary of the largest technology company in the world, Microsoft.
The suit claims that OpenAI has abandoned its original mission to benefit humanity in favor of making a buck.
But that perhaps ignores another possibility beneath the surface. What are Musk's motivations, and what does this timing signal about the latest battle?
Musk was one of OpenAI's co-founders and then left the company and just recently began developing his own competing AI venture, which some observers say could at least partly be motivating the lawsuit. And in cybersecurity news, the notorious ransomware group, Lockbit, tried to relaunch its site after law enforcement took down its servers and infrastructure last month. On its new bare-bones website, the group threatened to release documents from former President Donald Trump's 2020 election interference case. But the deadline Lockbit set for the release came and went without the posting of any leaked documents. And finally, in Washington, the Biden administration has announced two new efforts to secure the personal data of Americans while reining in the ability of data brokers to sell to foreign countries.
President Biden issued an executive order yesterday that restricts the sale of sensitive American data to Russia and China. That wasn't already restricted?
Other countries in the crosshairs include Iran and North Korea. But it's unclear how immediate or how effective the order will be. The president has also called for an investigation into cars and car technology that the U.S. imports from China. His concern? That they could be used to collect data on ordinary Americans.
Because God forbid, we all become dependent on a Chinese-built machine with internet connectivity.
Hello?
No, yeah, no, I think they get it.
To
Today's episode was produced by Sean Powers, Kat Shuknecht, and me, Jade Abdul-Malik. It was edited by Karen Duffin, fact-checked by Darren Ankrum, and contains original music by Ben Livingston, with some other music from Blue Dot Sessions. Our staff writer is Lucas Riley, and our illustrator is Megan Goff. Click Here is a production of Recorded Future News. Tune in on Friday for Mic Drop, which features our favorite interview of the week. And we'll have a new episode of Click Here on Tuesday. See you then.
Looking for more of the cybersecurity and intelligence coverage you get on Click Here? Then check out our sister publication, The Record, from Recorded Future News. You'll get breaking cyber news from reporters in New York, Washington, London, and Kyiv, among others. And you'll see for yourself why it attracts hundreds of thousands of page views every month. Just go to therecord.media.